You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Hello again, everyone. This is Doug Thorpe, and you're listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. You might say that I frequently visit the topic of creating the right kind of company culture for your team and for the business you may run. I think it is an important topic because it is our culture that helps secure our brand. And it's culture that helps retain the best talent. So it is a topic that I would argue is unavoidable if you're going to run a business or lead an organization. My guest today is someone who has done a lot of work in that space. His name is Jim Van Allen. Jim, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Doug. Love talking about positive leadership and culture. So looking forward to diving in.
So as is often a custom here, give us a little bit of backstory. How did you kind of get into the space you're in and what was your journey to get there?
You know, my space is I'm running an education business. We're the energy bus for schools and we create positive campuses all over the country. And we're growing very, you know, very rapidly. And we're in the space where we're helping leaders become more positive, more engaged, and building culture, right? So in order to get into this space, it's a tricky entrance, right? So I had actually always wanted to be a speaker, like a motivational speaker type person, even when I was young in high school and all that, and would see these guys and women on stage and be like, how could I do that? I love public speaking. So when I got into college, I emailed a up-and-coming speaker who lived kind of close to my campus. His name is John Gordon. And I just said, I would love to learn from you, right? And then we talked the next day. And that was 17 years ago, right? I started out as his intern and we just kind of grew his company together. As he wrote book after book after book, I would go out and speak all over the country to businesses and schools who were using his book, right? To build a culture, but they needed a speaker to help unlock it for them and show them the how-to. So that just grew into my role as running his education division. And here I am now as his president of the Energy Bus for Schools. So from intern to president, 17 years later, here we are.
Well, congratulations on that journey. And what a great testament to having some initiative and kind of like seek and you shall find. You know, you took the bold step of reaching out to somebody that you identified was doing the thing you wanted to do. I certainly encourage people to do that. We've talked about it a lot on this show. You know, reach out to that maybe like mentor type person that is in fact demonstrating accomplishment in whatever area you may be interested in going, and see what you can get. And in Jim's case here, got a whole career out of it and a destiny that is coming together quite nicely. Well, for anyone that might not be familiar with John Gordon's work, give us kind of an executive summary of what his books are about and the focal points there.
Really, I mean, to synthesize it, it's all about creating positive people who create positive results. It's not the pessimists that change the world. It's the positive people. It's the optimistic people. And if you read any of John's books, he's got 28 books out. And him and I just wrote a book called The Energy Bus for Schools. That's coming out March 6th. If you read that book or any of his other books, you're going to see that positivity is a competitive advantage. Wherever you are in business, if you're in school, it will give you the edge. And every book that he writes talks about the research behind the power of being a positive leader and fables and stories and case studies that go along with it. So that's what it's really about. It's positivity and it's the advantage you can get from becoming a positive leader and business and culture.
Well, I like that theme, and I am generally I'm very much a fan of that way of thinking. I'm frequently accused by associates I have of being the perpetual optimist and always, you know, looking for that silver lining and that cloud, and not in a way that's blind faith or anything, but just trying to find the positive out of every situation, because in my humble opinion, there's everyone is just that. It's a blend of the downside and the dark side, but there's also usually a positive in there somewhere if you just look for it. So that is a significant and important message, I think. What do you think holds people up from being able to show up in leader roles as more positive on a general basis?
I think they get caught in the day-to-day, right? And I think that that prohibits them from clearly thinking about the solutions. They get so too hung up on the challenges and the negativity and low morale around them that they over-focus on that negative. And that's an issue when you're over-focusing on the negative. You know, there was a great example. Somebody showed me, they held up a piece of white printer paper, right? And they put a small round dot in the middle, you know, maybe the size of a nickel, that was black, right? And they held it up and they're like, all right, you see that black dot in the middle? I said, that represents the negativity going on in your world or in your business. And yet when you stare at that white paper, right, your eyes can't help but go to that black circle there, but you don't realize that all the white there is all the good stuff happening, right? So you have to change your perspective. You have to change where you're looking. And leaders get held back by the negativity. They get held back by fear, right? Fear of being inadequate as a leader. Their anxiety may take over. Leadership's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. It's really not. And that's an okay thing. That's an okay thing. There's many roles for many different people. But it's those who are called into that leadership position, right, are the ones who really have to not be focusing on the fear aspect of things, because that will drive you to only being consumed by that for sure.
Well, with everyone's experienced coming out of the pandemic, a popular theme that often shows up, certainly in the executive coaching world, is this notion of resilience. And being able to, as a leader, you know, there's one argument to be made when we think about the body of work in leadership. It falls into three general large categories. If you are in a role that requires leadership, you first have to lead yourself, and that includes your own ability to manage and care for your own state of being, physical health, mental health, maybe even spiritual health, you know, all those things to keep you able to show up in the moment and have the energy you need to create influence. And then second and third buckets are leading others and then leading the enterprise or the organization at large. And this idea of resilience has been a popular topic because people are worn down by the grind that has become our new normal after COVID, where we don't have the boundaries of 9 to 5 anymore. You know, people don't think that way very often anymore. And a lot of people are working remote and they're wired in and turned on 24/7. And that adds to that grind.
And resiliency, you know, and that's a theme. I'm down in Florida. Resiliency is something that's going to soon be taught in schools because they want students to learn how to, you know, think for themselves. And when you're resilient, right, you've developed a tougher skin too, and you're able to deflect more of the negativity. And as a leader, that's what you want. I mean, I just met yesterday with the pastor of our church. He's newer. He's stepping into the role. He's newer into it. And I told him, I said, listen, because we want to just meet and talk. He's a young guy, great guy. But I said, you have to develop some thick skin because you're going to get some emails that are going to just, you know, be out of left field or be pointing out these little things. And we can't, I want to encourage you not to get hung up on the one or two emails that may come in about something being too loud or this picture was crooked or something, and focus on the 1,000 people that are coming in every weekend, right? So that's called being resilient, but that takes a conscious mindset to develop that as a leader, because like I said, there's so much, you can get caught up in the weeds of the day-to-day job duties of people coming at you, with negativity, with all that stuff. But when you're resilient, you can prioritize what you need to address, and you have a more clear line of thinking of what you need to do and not get caught up in the one or two negative things or whatever that is, whatever the negativity looks like, and really execute is what a leader should be doing, is always, you know, moving on, executing. What are the action steps? And you don't want stuff to hang you up.
I do see that. That's a great point, and thanks for sharing that. You know, I do see that, particularly in younger emerging leaders. There's a delicate sense of self when they take on that role and kind of step into that spotlight of whatever the leadership responsibility may entail. And when they start getting those barbs and darts thrown at them, it immediately becomes personal. And that is a tremendous detriment to the, you know, the ability to move forward, properly process and prioritize the significance of that meeting. And, you know, popular phrase is, you know, buckle up, buttercup, or, you know, it's not about you, you know, and as blunt and brutal as some of those phrases sound, and possibly even in some people's minds, inappropriate to even speak. So apologies to anybody that feels that way. It's a reality of being a leader. There, you're right. There's a delicate art of developing a slightly thicker skin, so that, not that you can ignore or totally rebuff any of that, but you can take it in and process it properly in the context of everything else you're trying to do.
Well, if you think about younger leaders too, so folks that are, you know, in their 20s, coming up in the leadership positions, 30s, you know, younger, they grew up in a world, and I, you know, I joined Facebook when it was first starting, but I'm a little bit, you know, older than the 20 somethings, right? But they grew up in a world where sometimes your value is dictated by social media, what others think of you, right? What others think of your posts and engagement on some of those posts, and living in that world where you're looking at people and judging them based on what you're seeing. So when they get into a leadership position, they've kind of had that mindset already of caring a lot about what others think. And that can be detrimental. I think it's important, I think, that leaders have a, you know, a healthy respect for what others think, but in the end of it all, right, they have to be able to make the decision for the greater good for everybody, despite pushback that may be received initially until it becomes a new norm, with policy or procedure, whatever they're changing or implementing. So I think that's something, if you have younger listeners, it's like you kind of have to turn that part of your brain off or start to transform it a little bit and say, okay, you know, life is not one big social media world. I'm in this position because I have the credibility, I have the resilience, and I'm not here by accident. I'm a culture builder, I'm a relationship builder, and I'm not afraid to have those difficult conversations when needed, but I'm also not afraid to make the executive decisions when they have to be made.
Right. Well, and the additional challenge that comes with that, usually when people are identified to step into management and supervisory roles for the first time, it's because they've been a high level contributor. They're the proverbial, you know, best salesman, best accountant, best engineer, best teacher, whatever. And they get tapped to move into these management roles. And there's this weird psychology that goes on that says, I got promoted because I was good at X. I need to double down on X, and that'll keep me sustained here. But the reality is, from day one of a new job like that, no, the charter has changed. You're supposed to be overseeing others that are doing X. And you may not be a player coach anymore. You know, you need to be the leader of the group, not the sole contributor anymore. And that's not an easy transition for a lot of people to make.
Well, right. And if you think about a transition into these managerial type roles for people, you can almost look at it as they're running so fast that they're building the airplane while they're in the air. right? They're developing their leadership style and skills and processes and communication skills, right? As they're in the position, like they don't,
right.
Some places may have the luxury of being able to send them to a management retreat or, you know, some type of how to be a leader type thing, you know, but honestly, those are great, right? And I'm part of stuff like that. And I provide some of that work. Coaching, of course, is excellent. I know you do that. But at the same time, these folks are really honing their skill set in the job, like in during the day, through just basic experience of it. And they have to be willing, your listeners, everybody has to be willing to show themselves some grace too, especially if you found yourself in a position and you were, like you said, a salesperson or something that didn't have a management component to it. It could be, when you get into a management position, it can feel like you are drinking from a fire hose, right? With just getting all this information, how to be a leader, how to manage people, relationships, now the product stuff. Show yourself, take a deep breath, show yourself some grace, go get the training you need, and understand that people are not looking for you to be perfect or have all the answers. We have to be willing to sit back sometimes and say, you know what? I need to find that out. Or what do you, or my biggest thing is I would say, well, what do you think? Right. What do you think? And just being able to delegate that way a little bit, and trust your skill set that it will bring you up to speed to being a great leader, but it's not going to happen overnight by any means, but it's worth the process. It's worth the fight. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, I've often looked back and laughed as a young Army officer, when I got out of college, a second lieutenant, I went into service and there was a older gentleman who took me under wing, kind of a mentor. He was a colonel at the time. So that's like six grades up. He told me flat out, he said, Doug, he said, this man's Army has low expectations of second lieutenants. So the bar is set really low. Yeah, so don't get hung up. Don't get hung up on what you anticipate or think might be the expectations. He said, I'm not telling you to go out there and work hard, study, and, you know, try to do a good job. I'm just telling you that the system says we don't expect much from second lieutenants because we need you to learn what it means to be an officer and move into that role a little more gracefully. Now, at the same time those words were being spoken, I was given assignments. You know, I had a multi-million dollar responsibility for property, book, and personnel. And, you know, at ripe old age of 22, you've got command authority over 450 people, and it's like, yeah, that's a big deal.
Right. And you're, you know, and they're looking at you and you're looking at them and everybody's trying to figure it out together. You know, I've worked with a lot of principals who are younger and they have to manage people that are much older than them and have been in this longer. Right. And it's, that creates a whole new layer of credibility issues and even that imposter syndrome that a lot of leaders can have. Right. Like, I think all of us have been in that situation before. I've certainly felt that every once in a while it'll creep in. I'll have a speaking engagement at a school or a huge district, and that little doubt will creep in to be like, are you really supposed to be here? And then all of a sudden you speak truth to that lie, right? And all your leaders should speak truth to the lies that they're hearing about their ability and you're not in that position by accident. You're there for a reason. And if you have to hone your skills as you go, that's okay. It's only going to get stronger.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Let's get back to the thought and topic of talking about developing culture and then the more positive culture. I guess the way I'd like to break it down, there's two scenarios that I think exist. One is the scenario, you're a new aspiring entrepreneur, you want to go build a business, so you're starting from scratch, you're attracting people, and you're trying to share values and direction and vision and all of that. That's great. I want to park that one for a minute. I want to talk about the other scenario, which is far more common for people, and that is, you are a leader of some sort, you get promoted into a role, and you inherit a team and a culture. you're not really building that team from scratch. Mm-hmm. You tend to inherit personnel who come with a pre-existing culture, whether it's good or bad. And so as that leader that's moving into that new opportunity, where do you say they should start thinking about the culture they want to develop?
Until come across that many, many times in my experience and people stepping into this position and they're handed a school or a group of people and it's like, all right, this has been set for a little bit. First thing I'm going to tell folks in that position is don't, I wouldn't rock the boat on day one. Okay. When you get into office, I wouldn't sign an executive order day one, rapidly changing massive policies. I'm going, especially when it comes to culture and vision, I want to talk to people first. I want to get on small group level, one-on-one levels, and I want to make sure I get to know my people first. And then as I'm doing that, right, I'm slowly inviting them to the vision that I have for this organization. And then in those one-on-ones, in those small groups, as I'm listening to their stories about what could be better and what could change or what's going well and you know, why we're in this position or where we are here, you know, I'm intaking. So if I'm a new leader coming into that type of position, I am in intake mode most of my day. Okay. Maybe even the first, you know, 2-3 months that wherever I'm at, I'm in intake mode. I'm getting a lay of the land. And then you'll know, if you haven't figured this out before you get there, then you'll know what really needs to kind of be tweaked or changed or eliminated, or maybe this person's in the wrong role, right? And then you can fully say, listen, like my vision for this organization is X. We're going to be a high performing company that, you know, has excellence with customer service, whatever it is, right? And they already know that a little bit because you've peppered that into your one-on-one conversations. Then they hear it as a big group, right? And they've already contributed some, you know, type of idea or solution to that vision. So I'm starting at the one-on-ones, the small groups. I'm getting people together. I'm walking around. I'm in intake mode. And then I'm putting my vision out there and I'm inviting them to be part of it. Because what you're doing is you're creating a collaborative effort to accomplish that vision, right? It's collaborative and everybody has a stake in it. Being realized or not. And if you have a stake in something, you're going to want to see it succeed. You're going to want to engage in it because you are helping to build it. And you have to frame it that way for sure.
And I think one thing that people that are leaders moving into those kind of roles, one thing that probably gets ignored or not thought about enough, and that is that if you inherit people that have long tenure in the organization, you probably have a much stronger upside than you do downside in that situation. And what I mean by that is people that have agreed to invest their own life journey with an organization usually are there still with a belief that they're hanging on to of some way to do the right thing. And they've been trying it regardless of what has been going on around them. They're still dedicated to that sort of personal sense, excuse me, of vision and purpose. And so they've been applying their energy and their time to make that happen. If you as a new leader come in, and I love what you said about intake first, sprinkle and pepper the ideas of the future as you talk and represent what you believe in. And then you open the door for that collaborative design of the new way forward, you might just find a large percentage of buy-in because these that have dedicated their time and energy, assuming your idea is a new step forward in a positive way, they're going to get excited again and they're going to say, ah, maybe this person will help us get there. You know, this is something I've been fighting, always wanting to do. The former leader never allowed us to do that or whatever the excuses are. And by having that open dialogue about discussing it, you may be pleasantly surprised at how much buy-in you really get right in the early stages.
Positive relationships build strength, in a company. They really do. And if you're building these connected, strong cultures, it's going to elevate relationships inside that culture, because relationships drive culture, right? So you have to, if I'm a leader, you have to start at the relational grassroots level, because as like to your point, you're going to have folks who find you to be very credible and have a stake in what's being built. And they want to, they almost have this thing where they don't want to let you down, right? So they want, because they've seen you come to them and want to build a relationship with them, want to get their ideas, want to get their input. So you as a leader going to the people, to the workers, to everybody, why would they want to flee, right? You're trying to help. You're going with open arms. You're not going with the cutting block, right? You're going with open arms because you want to collaborate. So if people will see that, that'll help to kind of break the ice, and then people will want to engage and be better, because positive relationships build strength for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of a situation recently. I've been engaged with a young man who went out and bought a pre-existing company, and it was a company that had been around for 30 something years, maybe 40 years, I think. The owner was a older baby boomer type who was ready, you know, life situation. He was ready to move on. And by all accounts, the owner who was selling the business was a great guy. He had built a great organization, good legacy, great brand reputation, all of that. And even at the smallest level, when the new owner moved in and had a very good experience making the transition, and did as you described, he spent a lot of time just intaking, talking to people and understanding the nuts and bolts of the business, and demonstrating to everybody that he had inherited that he was not there to make giant sweeping changes, but he wanted to perpetuate and propel the business to some other level of growth and expansion and success. And he finally got to a point, he said to one of the senior guys that was left behind in the transfer, he said, you know, our warehouse here doesn't look really good. I mean, I'm curious. This just walking through it doesn't strike me as well organized and efficient. What would you guys think about doing something to clean this up and fix it up? And I'm willing to spend a little money if we need new shelving or new materials to move things, whatever. And he said, the guy just beamed. He said, I love the old boss. I've worked for him for 20 years, but I never could get him to pay attention to the warehouse. He never wanted me out here doing anything. and he said, I have been wanting to do that for years. And my point is, the new owner got immediate buy-in just by throwing out a little suggestion. He didn't pose it as being hypercritical. He just said, isn't there a better way to do this? Isn't there something we ought to think about? And they jumped all over it.
People are, you know, they're exploding with ideas. There's so much potential in people, and in people who are, you know, not in managerial roles. They have great ideas because they see vantage points that we don't see sometimes in leadership positions. And that's why leaders should be spending over 50% of their day, you know, listening and talking to people and just getting a lay of the land wherever you are. I tell my principals, I said, go out, go in classrooms, talk to people, talk to parents, walk around, just watch your systems operate and just be part of it, because they see you out there. They're going to want to come up to you and say, and just talk about ideas and see you and want to build that trusting relationship. The ideas are there. That John and I always say, the genius is in the audience, right? When I do a workshop, when I facilitate, I love keeping it open-ended, because I'll get so many great ideas and content from the people sitting in front of me that, you know, it makes my job easy, right?
Yeah, agreed. Well, Jim, this has been great. I think we're about up on time for today's episode. Tell folks the best way to get a hold of you if they're interested in knowing more.
I've loved this conversation. I appreciate you having me on here. My direct email is jim@johngordon.com, jongordon.com. And our book, The Energy Bus for Schools, and our school-based program is at the website energybusforschools, F-O-R, forschools.com. And that has everything you need to know about purchasing the book or becoming a certified trainer with us or joining the program if you're a school, if you if your listeners are connected to schools. But we're trying to do a lot for creating healthy, positive culture inside of our schools. And a lot of this does transfer to business. And we work with a lot of businesses as well through the John Gordon Company. So happy to connect with anybody.
That's awesome. Well, again, one last time, thank you, Jim, for sitting in. Really appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
And with that, folks, we're going to bring this to a close. The link information that Jim mentioned will be in our show notes. So feel free to hop down there and mash one of the links and you'll get to those resources and that information. Also like to remind you, we do have a video version of this over on YouTube, channel by the same name, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Jump over there, check out the archive, look at topics that we might have alluded to in the show here, but you can see the full episode there. And for now, we're going to sign off, say goodbye, go out there, make it a great day.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.